Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studio. Welcome to the Spencer Wilson Show. I am your host, Spencer Wilson. We got a fun Monday show on tap for you. We'll talk about World Series games 3, 4, and 5 as all of those happened over the weekend and just completely turned the momentum around in favor of the Houston Astros. We'll also talk about NFL Sunday and react to all the games that happened yesterday and some of the injuries and some trades that have happened because of the games yesterday. And also talk about Monday Night Football tonight, of course, with the barn burner set up between the Miami Dolphins and the Pittsburgh Steelers. We'll look at that matchup as well. But first, let's start with what went down with our local teams, some of our local teams over the weekend. Not the most enjoyable weekend for a Nevada sports fan, but some bright moments here and there. A tough moment on the gridiron, or a tough game on the gridiron for Nevada once again this weekend on the road in a very tough place, Laramie, Wyoming, against a very good team in the conference this year, the Wyoming Cowboys. And Coach Norvell on the coach's show this past Wednesday was talking to John Ramey and I, and we asked him about the environment up there and about this team and what it would mean to go up there and compete. And he said it was going to be tough. It was going to be a rowdy crowd. They're a passionate fan base. And all of that was true. You could hear the crowd the entire game. They were in it from the get-go behind this team. And what was probably the worst start for Nevada happened. I mean, Wyoming gets the ball, and it takes them one play and 9 seconds to go 53 yards to get up 7-0 on the Wolfpack behind Valladay's 53-yard pass from Chambers. That was a tough start for the Wolfpack. You're on the road. You're coming off a tough loss against Utah State. You're trying to bounce back, and in one play, not only you allow the team to go 53 yards and go up 7-0. But again, Nevada can try to bounce back. Again, can't get anything really going on offense. Wyoming gets the ball, 7 plays, 52 yards, a little over 3 minutes, and Chambers able to run it in again from 2 yards out, 14-0 Wyoming. And now Nevada needs an answer, right? They needed to get back in it. They needed to show some kind of life. They needed to put a drive together, move the ball down the field, just get points on the board. And they were able to do that in the first quarter with a 9-play drive that went 71 yards, just shy of 4 minutes, and it did end with a Brandon Tolton 28-yard field goal to put Nevada on the board and make it an 11-point deficit, 14-3 in the first quarter. And really, that's about the only bright spot for Nevada in that game. Again, some nice plays by some individuals kind of sprinkled throughout the rest of the three quarters, but nothing good enough to get points on the board, and this team just kind of continued to struggle. And again, some injuries at quarterback and some injuries throughout the offense and the defense, not making it easy on this team. But again, the 2 turnovers, they were able to force one against Wyoming, so a little bit better in that respect. But when you're losing that turnover battle in a game, it's still going to be tough to compete. It's tough to compete on the road in conference. Just look at San Diego State and UNLV. That should have been a game that the Aztecs walked in there and kind of manhandled the Rebels a little bit. And instead, UNLV narrowly beat the Aztecs there late in the game. So it's just tough. It's tough to go on the road, period, in a conference play, regardless of the conference you're in. And for Nevada, unfortunately, after getting that 28-yard field goal from Tolton, just wasn't able to build on that at all. And this Wyoming defense stood strong and stood tall and are really looking like conference contenders out of that Mountain Division. And for Nevada, again, we've talked about it time and time again. We've talked about it on the coaches show as well. You've heard it from Coach Norvell. This is a testing period of the season. And right now, you're 4-4 and 1-3 in conference with 4 games left. You have one last shot to make a run and really cap off your season. Because to think about it right now, Nevada being 4-4, right? This season showed so much promise with the big win against Purdue at the start of the season. And then you went up and had that tough game against Oregon, but again, on the road against the Ducks team. That's very good. Now continuing to fight for a playoff spot and getting that contention. We can understand that loss. Then you come back and you win 2 in a row. You beat Weber State 19-3, or Weber State, should be Weber, but beat Weber State 19-13. Then won at UTEP 37-21. And after that UTEP game, Nevada's 3-1. They're looking strong, looking good. Then you have the Hawaii flop. Lost 54-3 at home. Bounced back nicely, grinded out a win against San Jose State. Now you've lost 2 tough games on the road, 36-10 to Utah State and 31-3 to Wyoming. So you look at this Nevada team that's 4-4, that had a promising start and has gone through a rough stretch. If they can pull off a great finish to the season, and it's not going to be easy. New Mexico at home, I mean, that's a winnable game. Then at San Diego State, at Fresno State, those are both tough. And then the battle for the cannon at home against UNLV, anything can happen in that game. But if Nevada is able to put together a solid end of the season, because they're 4-4 now, if they were to finish 8-4, and they're 1-3 in conference, so if they win out, they would finish 5-3 in conference. Looking at where the pack is right now, if they are able to complete that end of the season run, finish 8-4 overall and 5-3 in conference, that would be a miraculous bounce back for this team, and it would look so good just as a program. And that would make you feel so good to come down the end of your season and finish that way, and you'd be bowl eligible. 5-3 in the conference, probably going to miss out on the conference championship game the way that San Diego State's playing at the top of that at the Western Conference right now. But to finish 5-3 with a winning record in conference, 8-4 overall, and be on your way to another bowl game, that would be a fantastic finish for the Wolfpack, and it is possible. It's not going to be easy, but it is possible, and it all starts this weekend at home against New Mexico. You got to bounce back. You have to win this game. This game against New Mexico at home is must win for Nevada and the rest of their season, because at San Diego State and Fresno State, those are going to be two very tough tests, and if you can manage to pass those tests, if you get out of there with a win, maybe even split the two road games and win one, lose one, you still look good then coming back home to finish off your season against UNLV. And if you were to do that, right, so let's say they beat New Mexico, they split those two road games. Now we're already looking at a 6-win Wolfpack team that's bowl eligible. Then if you're able to beat UNLV, you finish, let's say, with just 7 wins. But you finish with a winning record in the regular season, you're on your way to a bowl game, and you've brought the cannon back to Reno. The way the place that Nevada is in now, even whether it's 7-5 or 8-4, if they can pull out one of those finishes, although the 7-5 finish would have to be accompanied by the cannon. You got to beat UNLV for this season to then be a success if you go 7-5. Because if you beat New Mexico, you beat UNLV, but you lose to San Diego State and Fresno State, finish 6-6, not great. Still bowl eligible, and you got the cannon. But after last season, 6-6, a .500 record, that's too much of a drop-off in my opinion. But Nevada has a chance to go 7-5. I think the chance is still there for 8-4, but they definitely have a chance to go 7-5. And you bring the cannon back on your way to another bowl game. We can call this season a good and productive season for the Nevada Wolfpack football team. But again, that all starts this coming Saturday at home against New Mexico. You have to win that game to get the last part of the season off to a good start. And now we move on to some other action that went on over the weekend. The women's soccer team had 2 home games here at Mackey Stadium, one on Friday and then one on Sunday. The game on Friday where they hosted Colorado State University, another tough loss in overtime for this team. They just cannot catch a break in overtime this season. These ladies have worked so hard and they continue to compete. A scoreless first half, just two teams fighting it out. Get to the second half, 2 late goals. Peyton Leab put one in the net for Nevada in the 81st minute to give them a 1-0 lead. And just a couple minutes later in the 83rd minute, Kaylee Lorderman put one in for Colorado State to tie it up at 1. We go to overtime, 93rd minute. Lorderman strikes again, puts Colorado State up 2-1, and it's a tough loss again for Nevada. Even though they were incredibly outshot, 26 shots to 7, 12 on target to 5 in favor of Colorado State. Again, Nevada just from pure heart and fight, staying in that game all the way till the end. And they had a great bounce back on Sunday. They hosted Wyoming and picked up a 2-1 win. Again, just a grinded out kind of first half. Wyoming then able to get on the board in the 55th minute, take a 1-0 lead, but Nevada comes right back. Gabby Brown in the 74th minute off a penalty kick, ties it up at 1, and then just a few seconds later, Hannah Sauza gets another goal to make it 2-1 Nevada, and they ride that all the way to the end. So the women's team now 4-13 overall, but 3-7 in conference, finally on a winning streak again. These women work so hard, they finally get on the winning streak, and now they got one game left. this Friday at UNLV. It'll be their final game of the season. Hopefully they can bring it home again, end the season on a two-game winning streak, and knock off the Rebels to end their season. The volleyball team also, and I'm sorry, the swim and dive team was also in action this weekend. So was the volleyball team. We'll talk about swim and dive here first. They hosted Fresno State on Friday and then UC Davis on Saturday and had two big wins at the Lombardi Pool here in Reno. First off, against Fresno State in conference, Nevada with a 179-102 victory. And then on Saturday afternoon, met UC Davis at the Lombardi Pool and picked up a 190-106 win. So this team now 4-0 overall, 2-0 in the conference, looking very, very strong to start their season. We'll see how that continues. And the women's volleyball team was on the road at Colorado State on Saturday and unfortunately got swept by the Rams. What may have been one of the more lopsided set scores I've seen against Nevada this season, with Colorado State winning 25-12 in the first set. But Nevada fighting back a little bit in the second set, although Colorado State still won 25-16. And then coming out of the halftime break, Nevada really fought in the third set, but Colorado State just able to squeeze away enough to win that final set 27-25. So the volleyball team now still with a winning record overall. They are 14-8 overall, but 4-6 in conference play, looking to bounce back this week with two home games on Thursday against Utah State University, then on Saturday hosting Boise State University, both in conference. And then, unfortunately, the happy event of Saturday night is not going to roll over to this next weekend, with the Reno 1868 FC hosting their first playoff game against rivals Sacramento Republic FC and coming up short 3-1 in that game. Unfortunate to see Reno go out, especially after having an electric start to the game. Corey Herzog putting some great pressure on the Sacramento keeper, able to cause a mistake, and the fifth minute puts Reno up 1-0, and really euphoria from that point. Right, I mean, it was a hyped crowd going into the game. It was a hyped crowd at kickoff to have Corey Herzog then come out. I mean, for him to do it, for somebody that's played so well for this club all season long, provided so many electric and fun plays for this team, for him to come out, show that effort, show that fire in the fifth minute, get a goal, and put Reno up 1-0, that was... I mean, you couldn't have pictured a better start for Reno at their home game. Then, unfortunately, Sacramento Republic just kind of took over from there. They weren't down for too long. A few minutes later, Sam Werner was able to tie it up on a ball into the box, across into the box, and put Sacramento level at 1-1. And it was kind of just a dueling rest of the first half. Both teams got some opportunities. Both teams' defenses and goalkeepers stood strong. And really, they did the same thing in the first half the first part of the second half. Until Cameron Owasa got a 70th-minute goal for Sacramento, and Thomas Einfolsen got a 75th-minute goal. And Sacramento, unfortunately, was kind of pulled away 3-1. And Reno got some chances there in the second half, but weren't able to really complete it and convert. And unfortunately, in the playoffs, when it's one and done like that, those kind of nights where you're good, just not good enough, really hurt. But take nothing away from this Reno team. They played so well and fought so hard all season long, three seasons, three playoff appearances. It's still such a young club. I think we forget that a lot of the time with how much success and how well this team has played from day one under Coach Ian Russell and his staff. But this is still a very young franchise. They're going to continue to get better. They'll know what it takes to make a deep playoff run here, I feel like, very, very soon within the next couple years. And like the Aces were celebrating a world championship, I feel like Reno will be celebrating a USL championship here sooner rather than later. But it will have to come no sooner than next season. And then a quick update on the USL bracket. A couple of upsets through the USL Western Conference. Phoenix Rising FC, the number one overall seed, got pushed to the brink by Austin Bold. Phoenix had to go to sudden death penalty kicks to beat Austin Bold FC, which Phoenix did 8-7 in penalty kicks. And then Real Monarchs beat Orange County SC 6-2, setting up a 1-4 seed matchup there in the conference semifinals. And then El Paso Locomotive upset the 3 seed Fresno FC 3-2. Then, of course, Sacramento beating Reno sets up an El Paso Sacramento Western Conference semifinals matchup. Then in the East, we had Pittsburgh Riverhounds SC, the number 1 seed, advance with a 7-0 victory over Birmingham. And then number 4, Louisville City FC, was able to beat Tampa Bay Rowdies 2-1, which sets up a Pittsburgh-Louisville Eastern Conference semifinal matchup. And then the Indy 11 picked up a big 1-0 win over New York Red Bulls 2. And then Nashville SC was able to beat Charleston Battery 3-1. So the top 4 teams in the East all moving on to the conference semifinals coming up this weekend. That's where we stand with local sports in the USL playoffs. When we come back from the break, we're going to take a look at games 3, 4, and 5 and how they were massive momentum shifters for the Houston Astros heading back home. That's coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, Washington had a 2-0 series lead after shocking Houston's 2 AL Cy Young candidates in Houston, and then everything just fell apart at home at Nationals Park. We've talked about home field advantage. It's been road team advantage so far, with all 5 games being won by the road team. And let's look at these 3 games in our nation's capital, because Game 3 really felt like Houston clawing back. Like, you look at Game 4 and Game 5, it was Houston's power. It was them flexing their muscle, them showing what they can do throughout the lineup. But Game 3 really felt like Houston just, again, kind of working their way through it. And I think a part of that was having Zach Greinke out there and having him put in a solid start. 4 2/3 innings pitched, allowed 7 hits but only gave up 1 earned run, walked 3, struck out 6. So with that, you know, he's not really to the level of Verlander and Cole in terms of this whole season's body of work. But this postseason, he's been very good. That was a solid outing for him there in the World Series. And then their bullpen just picked it up right after that. James came in with an inning and a third pitch where he struck out 1. Peacock then with an inning and a third of an inning. Harris with an inning and 2/3. Smith with an inning. Osuna with an inning. I mean, those are just quality appearances by guys out of the bullpen. Again, whether it was a third of an inning or almost 2 innings, they came in there, they did their job. Greinke gave up the 1 earned run. Nobody from the bullpen gave up a run. Only Smith and Osuna actually gave up a hit. And then a couple strikeouts per pitcher. So, I mean, if you're Houston coming off those first 2 games at home, your bats are able to be, you know, it wasn't as electric as we saw in games 4 and 5, but their bats were still able to pick it up. 11 hits overall in the game. No errors on Houston's side. Washington, of course, with 2 errors in that game. But this was Houston, I feel like, kind of playing your old-style baseball matchup. Your starter does something, your bullpen comes in, your bats get you a few runs. With Reddick singling to left in the second inning, which allowed Correa to come in and score. Then Brantley reached on the infield single. Altuve came in and scored. Brantley again with a single. Then Chirinos was the only one with a home run. That was the only run. Chirinos' solo home run in the top of the sixth to make it 4-1 Houston was the only home run in that game. Thinking about how Houston has swung the bat all season long, and even in the ALCS and ALDS, I think that's the only home run in that game is pretty impressive in the fact they're getting runs in by getting hits and working the pitcher. And Houston did a really good job of just continuing to fight in this game. And again, coming out on top 4-1. And that was, you know, the streak breaker. Washington had come off with a win over Los Angeles, 4 straight over St. Louis, the first 2 in Houston. They were on a 7-game winning streak, and boom, that was the one where Houston just said, no thank you, here's your roadblock, try to get around it. And Washington couldn't get around it. Because then we get to game 4, and everything just goes up in smoke. Houston again, right there in the first inning. Bregman singled to left center. Altuve was able to come in and score. And then Gurriel reached on an infield single. Brantley came in to score to make it 2-0 Houston, and right out of the gate, you felt like Houston had gotten their mojo back. You felt like this was the Houston team that can step up no matter who it is in the lineup, whether they hit a home run, a double, a single, just pop it up. Something good is going to come out of every at-bat for Houston, and it kind of felt like that moving forward. Again, you get to the end of the fourth inning. Chirinos again with a home run to left with Correa on board, made it 4-0 Houston, and kind of held that all the way to the sixth. Soto on a ground out was able to get Parra home to make it 4-1, but Washington got out of that sixth inning jam. Then in the seventh, Bregman stepped up and hit a home run with the bases loaded. That grand slam from Alex Bregman, one, got so much frustration out of Alex Bregman, and probably felt like the world was lifted off his shoulders when he hit that grand slam. And two, really felt like the momentum shifter. Even though Houston had won Game 3, again, they kind of had to scratch and claw and get that victory in Game 3. That grand slam in Game 4 really felt like that was Houston taking the momentum back from Washington. They had gotten out to a 4-1 lead or a 4-0 lead. Houston had made some kind of indent getting a run on the board, and then Houston just shut the door on the Nationals with that grand slam in the seventh to make it 8-1 Astros, and he just felt like the Nationals could feel it slipping from their grasp, home field advantage that is, slipping from their grasp with that loss and now tying the series up 2-2. Game 5 essentially became, I don't want to say it was a must win for Washington because it wasn't. Tuesday is going to be must win for Washington, but Game 5 was about as close as you could get to an unofficial must win. To lose all three at home would be, I feel like, devastating to Washington. And, of course, we know that's what happened. Gerrit Cole came back out there. He got his second chance in the World Series. He did not miss it with just an unbelievable stat line after seven innings pitched. Just three hits, two walks, one earned run, nine strikeouts. He had 110 pitches. One of those were thrown for strikes. I mean, when you take over seven innings out of a game and just leave two to your bullpen, chances are you're going to have a good result come from that. And Smith did a great job. One inning pitched, a hit and a strikeout. Presley then shut the door in the ninth of the inning pitch, struck out one. Just 13 pitches there in the ninth inning, all that needed for Presley to win the game. And for Houston again, really kind of spaced it out. They came out slow in the first inning, but Alvarez then homered to center with Gurriel on board in the second, make it 2-0 Houston. Fourth inning, Correa with Alvarez on board hit a home run to make it 4-0 Houston. Soto able to give the fans a little bit of life with a home run there in the seventh. But again, Washington kind of cutting into Houston's lead once again down 4-0, make it 4-1, and just can't stop the Astros train from continuing to run over Washington with Gurriel getting a single into center in the eighth, which allowed Springer to come in and score, and then Springer homeward with Maldonado on base in the ninth to make it 7-1 Houston. And you feel like the bats finally have the confidence again. I felt like Houston was going to come out and win the first two at home. They didn't. I feel like with their emotional win over the Yankees in the ALCS, then with Washington having that extended layoff, completely proved me wrong. And the Nationals came out with all the fire in the world in those first two games. As AJ Hinch said, they were outplayed and outcoached in those first two games at home. But now Houston has gone on the road and just completely turned the tables. And honestly, Houston does have a 3-2 lead, but until a home team wins a game, I would still say that there's a little bit of momentum still with Washington. I think Houston has taken most of it back, up 3-2 in the series and winning three straight on the road, but it's been the road team series. So as much as that 3-2 series lead looks nice for Houston, Washington has won the two games so far in Minute Maid Park, and they're going to go back probably with a little bit of confidence because of that. I think had they won one game at home, they'd come back to Minute Maid Park with even more confidence and ready to take a 3-2 lead to a World Series championship. But with those two wins on the road in Games 1 and Game 2, Washington still has a bit of a mental edge, I feel like, in this series. And granted, for Houston to break that streak would mean they'd win the World Series, and that's, I think, what it would take. That's going to finally break Washington mentally, is if you can get them 8th or 9th inning in Game 6 or Game 7 with the lead, you'll finally be able just to close that door and win it. Because obviously we've seen, don't forget about the 2011 World Series, where Texas was an out away, a strike away from eliminating the St. Louis Cardinals and winning it, and the St. Louis Cardinals came back twice and won Game 6 to force Game 7. So even with Washington down 3-2, they are still in it until they are down either in Game 6 or Game 7 in the top of the ninth, having to score a couple runs. Until then, this team, I feel like, is still going to have a bit of a mental edge. They're still going to know they can win in Minute Maid Park in the postseason. And Justin Verlander is not the same guy in the World Series. I don't know what it is between the regular season and those first couple playoff rounds. He is nearly untouchable. Then he gets into the World Series. He's had 6 starts. He's 0-5 with 1-0 decision. I don't know what happens to him when he gets to the World Series. Only he knows that. But for Washington to be going back to Minute Maid Park, where they've won the first 2 games there, those are the only 2 wins this series, to once again be going up against Justin Verlander, who struggled in Game 2 against this team, Washington, with that little bit of a mental edge I feel like they still have from knowing they can win in that ballpark, is going to push Justin Verlander to the limit, and he's either going to slip up again, and we're going to have Game 7 on Wednesday, or Verlander might just put in the best performance he's had in the postseason and lift Houston to a second World Series championship in 3 years. My feeling, I picked Houston in 6, and I was doubting that decision after Game 2. Didn't change it. Never changed my prediction. Stuck with Houston in 6. I just wasn't sure how they were going to be able to do it. But here you go. Pitching has picked up. Their bullpen looked great in Washington, and their bats are back on fire. So if they can carry some of that back to home, no doubt Houston can walk away with another World Series ring. With Verlander on the mound in Game 6, I feel like it's probably going to go to Game 7 just with how much Verlander has struggled in the postseason and not knowing. I mean, you just don't know. You just don't know if he's going to step out there and we're going to see the Verlander from the ALCS or the ALDS or the regular season, or if it's just going to be another poor World Series start for Verlander out there on the mound. So I would love to see Houston win it in Game 6. And that way I can get something right this postseason in Major League Baseball. But with the way my predictions have gone, it's probably going to go 7 games. But either way, if Houston can pull off a victory and get the series win, I'm going to feel good. I know my dad was rooting for Washington. A lot of people were, just to see somebody new and somebody different, especially a team in their first World Series, go on and win the championship. But I think it is still going to go to Houston. I hope it's Game 6 so I can be right tomorrow night. But we'll talk more about that game on tomorrow's show as we get ready for Game 6 of the World Series. And because of some late at-bats in that game last night, Game 5, there's been a lot of talk around electronic strike zones. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that tomorrow in my Two Spenceworth segments. We'll dive a little bit deeper into my thoughts on Major League Baseball moving towards the electronic balls and strike zone. But when we come back from the break, I'll give you my reaction to all the happenings from yesterday's NFL Sunday and some of the trades now that we know have happened because of some of those injuries. But we'll talk about all that coming up after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, week 8 is in the books, and it had some interesting results. It had some injuries. It had some trades. So let's talk about that now as we are on the eve of Monday Night Football tonight. We had a slew of interesting games yesterday, starting with the Chargers and the Bears. Chicago had a very Charger-esque meltdown there in the late stages of the game. Chargers got the go-ahead touchdown in the fourth quarter, went up 17-16. The Bears getting the ball, making a great drive down the field, setting themselves up to be in field goal range, get the game-winning kick and celebrate, put the Chargers on a 4-game losing streak, and just elevate the Bears back into that sort of contention area in the NFC North. But another game-winning field goal missed. It started pretty far left. Started to hook pretty far left and then just, again, missed the upright and gave the Chargers a 17-16 win. And after the way the Bears were eliminated from the playoffs last year with the missed field goal, you would think that they would go the extra mile to make sure that problem was resolved. And even though the Chargers went through a season or two where they couldn't get their kicking problems straight, I feel your frustration, Chicago, and you just might want to get used to going for it for the rest of the season. I mean, you're down 17-16 now. When you look at the NFC North standings, they're in last place behind Detroit Lions, who has one less loss than them. Detroit's 3-3-1, Chicago 3-4. So they are about, I think you'd calculate that as a half game back from Detroit, but then Minnesota's starting to run away with 6 wins, Green Bay with 7 wins after their victory last night, which we'll get to that. But if you're the Chicago Bears, I think it's time just to start pushing all the chips into the center of the table and going for it on fourth down, going for it instead of a field goal, try and win it with a touchdown, because when your special team is having problems, that's such a mental factor for a football team. It goes into changing how you look at situations early in the game, towards halftime, late in the game, how comfortable are you to put your kicker out there. It pushes your field goal target line even further down the field, making those last game drives or end of the game drives even longer and more challenging for your offense. So if you're Chicago, I think you better just get used to going for it in the second half of the season, because 3-4 right now, you need to get a move on with the way Minnesota and Green Bay are starting to gap this division. And then Seattle held on for a nice win on the road against Atlanta. Matt Schaub, very good game as a backup quarterback. 39 of 52, 400 yards, and threw for a touchdown. Nearly led an Atlanta Falcons comeback after trailing 24-0 at halftime. Came all the way back to make it a 7-point game and almost pulled off there at home against Seattle. Came up a little short. And that is the lesson of the season this year for NFL teams. You have to have a good backup in order to be in a good position all season long. We've seen more and more injuries each year, it feels like. More and more star players put on that injury block. And if you have a backup quarterback, I mean, that is a position to where a starter and a backup can change things immensely. I mean, if you have your third and fourth receivers out there, maybe your second, third running backs in the backfield, you can find ways around that. But when you have your backup quarterback in there, that is essentially a huge change for your offense. We've seen it this year. When you have a backup quarterback that can constantly step in and make good plays, like a Bridgewater or a Schaub or whoever it is, they can step in and make plays happen and keep you on the rails. In this case for Atlanta, your season was already pretty much lost coming into this game. Not that this loss really affects that, but Matt Schaub showed them he has some fight. Show them Atlanta has some fight, and they nearly came back at home against Seattle. And this, to me, was one of the more surprising games of the Sunday, the Eagles bashing the Bills. Not so much surprising that Philadelphia got the win. They've struggled this season. They are 4-4, but they're still a good team with some good talent. It was a little surprising to me that they beat Buffalo so badly. A Bills team that's shown a lot of fight, shown a lot of heart, shown that they can hang with teams, especially at home. They've been very competitive in Buffalo this year. And to lose 31-13, it feels like the Bills slipped a little bit and the Eagles took advantage and made this a statement game. After Peterson said they were going to win the game in Dallas that they didn't win last week, everything was pretty quiet going into this game from the Philadelphia sideline. You would expect, I mean, once you try to call your shot and miss it, you essentially need to stop trying to call your shot throughout the season. Now you just got to play. And Philadelphia did a really good job of that. Carson Wentz, 17-24 for 172 yards and a touchdown. Jordan Howard added a touchdown on the ground with 96 yards and 23 carries. Alshon Jeffrey, 64 yards and 4 receptions. The Eagles team that really pulled away. Really kind of throughout the second and third quarter, just did kind of the right thing throughout those two quarters defensively and offensively to really set themselves up nicely for a win. And the Eagles bounced back after the loss to Dallas very nicely on the road against a challenging Bills team this year. Because don't forget, even with that loss, Buffalo is still in second place in the AFC East. Granted, New England now has really gapped them, 8 wins to Buffalo's 5. But still, you look at the Jets, 1-6, and the Dolphins, 0-6. The Buffalo Bills are so solidly in that second-place spot right now. And you look at the other second-place teams in the AFC Conference, Pittsburgh with 2 wins, Houston with 5 wins, and Oakland with 3 wins. Right now, Buffalo's looking like a solid wild-card team in the AFC. So that's a good win for Philadelphia and a good bounce-back win. And then Detroit at home, again, just challenges a good team. The Detroit Lions beating the New York Giants 31-26 behind Stafford's 3 touchdowns yesterday. Saquon Barkley, even though he had 64 yards on 19 carries, had some beastly runs, just throwing some guys off him throughout that game. You hope he continues to get healthy and continue to recover from that quad injury and just continues to get healthier and pull away at some of these defenders, as he had some monster runs yesterday. And if he can get that run game going again for the Giants and help kind of Daniel Jones, I mean, if that run game gets going, it's going to help Daniel Jones settle down more in the pocket and get back to being that pocket passer the Giants really enjoy, that Eli Manning gave them for so many years there in New York. So it's good to see Barkley getting back at it. And again, just the Lions at home. This is a tough team to beat at home. They're in the third place in what has been a very tough NFC Northern division right now. I mean, you got Green Bay and Minnesota, two teams on 4-game winning streaks on the top of that division. So Detroit, 3-3-1. I didn't think they'd be at that position 7 games into the season through week 8. And honestly, they're better than I thought they were going to be this year, and especially at home, seeing way more competitive. So it's fun to see them get another win. Giants still going through that kind of growing phase with a lot of young guys trying to be stars there with like Saquon and Daniel Jones. So it's good to see them continue to stay competitive, but not surprised that the Lions, against a young quarterback at home where they've been competitive, were able to get the win. Tennessee with a strong win at Tampa Bay. Jameis Winston, 2 touchdowns, but did have 4 turnovers in that game as well. So kind of getting the yin and the yang with Winston in that game. Derrick Henry took over on the ground. Mike Evans had a nice day out wide for Tampa Bay. But this was a game that I think the Buccaneers could have won, maybe should have won, if a defensive touchdown wasn't drawn back by an early whistle. And Bruce Arians went on to talk about that. The referees aren't held accountable, which is absolutely true. And we'll talk about that a little later on in this week. I think Wednesday, that'll be, I think, my two spence worth. I'll give you on the NFL officiating, kind of how you can hold them responsible, because I think that's true. There isn't really a process of kind of punishment for NFL officials, or even like a learning curve, you know, like, hey, if you make this mistake, we're going to do this to help you get better and make sure we don't see those kind of mistakes again. Because we've heard it all season long. Don't blow the whistle too early, because you can always take points off the board rather than putting points back on the board. So had Tampa Bay scored that touchdown and they see, oh, the guy was down by contact, okay, no problem. Bring the ball back, take the points off the board. First down for Tampa Bay. In this case, it wrecked. It took a touchdown off the board for Tampa Bay, which could have been the game-winning score and turned that game all around. So we'll talk a little more about that later on this week. But I agree, this is a game Tampa Bay could have won, but it's a feel-good win for Tennessee at home, with both these teams struggling in their divisions. Speaking of the AFC South, the Indianapolis Colts and Mr. Forever Young, Adam Vinatieri, hit a 51-yarder to win the game. Interesting comments as well by Joe Flacco. I'm sure you've heard him now. If you haven't, essentially he just said that we're a 2-6 football team, and it seems like we're afraid to try and win the game. I think that's very true. I mean, you were 2-5 going into the game, fighting at the bottom of the AFC West, trying to keep pace with an Oakland Raiders team that seems to be pretty up and down, but a Kansas City Chiefs team that we've seen now with Matt Moore, not horrible. When Mahomes gets back, they're going to be deadly again. So if you're Denver, you got to start taking chances, kind of like Chicago. Start getting ready to push all those chips into the middle of the table and just start going for it. And they had a chance against Indy and didn't take that chance. And that's one of the reasons why they came up short. But good to see Vinatieri out there still kicking game-winning field goals. Moving on now to the London game. Didn't know this game was in London. Probably would have helped if I had seen that, because Sean and I on Friday were talking about how I didn't see Cincinnati going into Los Angeles to get a win. Well, they didn't have to. They both went to London. Still didn't help them, as Goff and the Rams just took over. Cooper Kupp had a great day as well. Rams 24-10. The Bengals' woes still continue. When Sean got here today, he said, yeah, everybody on Cincinnati is requesting a trade. Not surprising. Pretty sure everybody would want to request a trade. No one wants to be wearing Cincinnati uniforms this year. At least Miami has owned it. It wasn't supposed to be this bad for Cincinnati, and it's going to get worse. Saints and Cardinals. Man, it was great to see Drew Brees back out there. Teddy Bridgewater had played great, but there is nobody else like Drew Brees. The way he goes out there, just executes calm, cool, and collected. Bridgewater is going to be the guy for New Orleans when Brees says that's enough for him. But until then, gosh, it's fun to watch him out there on that field, especially at home in front of those Saints fans. They love him. He loves them. It's great. Kyler Murray still had a great game, even though Arizona struggled. You knew it was going to be a tough game for him on the road, but hats off to Kyler Murray continuing to play well, and it's a good bounce-back win for Breeze and another good win for the Saints. Minshew also had a good game at home against the Jets, 22 of 34, 279, and 3 touchdowns. Minshew mania, little hot and cold, but it was very hot this week. It was fun to watch him play. Leonard Fournette had a great game for Jacksonville as well. Chris Connolly had a great game out wide for the Jags. So a solid overall victory from Jacksonville. A.J. Boye as well showed that he's ready to be the lone star in that secondary with Jalen Ramsey gone now. So it was fun to see him step up and make some big defensive plays as well. What can you say about the 49ers? A 50 spot, 51 really, on Carolina. It was a game I was kind of nervous about, seeing as how Kyle Allen, the way Christian McCaffrey have been playing, that defense not looking too bad either. But man, the 49ers just did not care. Garoppolo, 18 of 22, 175, 2 touchdowns. George Kittle, once again, 6 receptions, 86 yards, just making plays for those 49ers on offense. Fun to see that team continue to roll. Patriots rolled it over the Browns, 27-13. Baker Mayfield in that pass game just seem like they cannot get anything right. Nick Chubb, though, still looking good running it on the ground, but no surprise the Patriots in Foxborough beat Cleveland. Houston with the the big win over the Raiders, 27-24, outscoring Oakland 14-3 in the fourth quarter. Again, a game that Oakland probably should have won on the road, but Deshaun Watson and Houston playing really, really well. Even though J.J. Watt is now out for the year with that torn pectoral, I still think the Texans have a good chance of making a run to win the AFC South. And the way Deshaun Watson and those other guys were playing that day, they game at home, came away with the win. Don't underestimate that team, regardless of whether or not J.J. Watt's on that roster as a player or not. And then finally, Packers and the Chiefs. Mahomes out. Matt Moore once again takes over. Does not look that bad at all. Trailed 14-0 after the first, but led that team to 17 unanswered in the second quarter to take a 17-14 lead to the half. It was a super entertaining game. Matt Moore again proving that backup quarterbacks are important. He played really well, although Rodgers, Aaron Jones led the way in both rushing and receiving. You just can't stop the Packers right now with the way they played, and you felt like without Mahomes out there, it would be kind of the one missing piece for that Chiefs offense, and it turned out to be the case. But still, nonetheless, a good win for the Packers, and a good loss for the Chiefs, really. Without your star player out there, without the reigning MVP under center, you still managed to only lose by 7 points to one of the best teams in the NFL this year. It's nothing to be ashamed about from the side of the Kansas City Chiefs. But that's what went down yesterday on Sunday. Tonight, we got the Dolphins and the Steelers. We'll talk about that matchup on Monday Night Football coming up after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
So Monday Night Football tonight is set up with Miami at Pittsburgh. The 0-6 Dolphins, the 2-4 Steelers. I mean, what do we really expect from this game? Do we expect Miami to get their first win of the year against a backup quarterback in Pittsburgh? Maybe. I mean, if they were going to win a game against any kind of high-profile team that's dealing with some injuries right now, it could be the Steelers tonight. And we do have one of our pals here at the station. Her name is Jamie. You might know her if you listen to The X, which is one of our sister stations. But she's involved in our office NFL pick'em pool each week. She's moved up the rankings, as she shared with me today. And she shared with me that she was the only person that meant to pick Miami. Not sure who picked Miami and didn't mean it. Those people probably aren't doing too well. But Jamie might be on to something. Because the Dolphins' offensive line has been tough this year, but they might be starting to get some groove. They might be starting to get some kind of groove going, as Fitzpatrick wasn't sacked in their loss last week at Buffalo. So maybe they're starting to get Fitzpatrick some time, even though I don't agree with Fitzpatrick being out there. I've said that. It needs to be Rosen, but it won't be because Miami has no idea what they want to do this year. A la sending Kenyon Drake to Arizona now, because that makes a whole lot of sense, doesn't it, Miami? Send your leading rusher to Arizona because you don't want to win. We got it. But the offensive line could help Fitzpatrick tonight against a Pittsburgh Steelers offense that will be without one of their big outside linebackers, and Anthony Chiquillo, who was on the commissioner's exempt list for an October 20th arrest. And with that issue to the Steelers linebacking core, this might be a game where Miami can pull it off. I'm hoping they don't, because as I mentioned, I think it was last week, Miami and Cincinnati play each other, I believe, in Week 16, and I am dying to have two 0-14 teams meeting in a Week 16 clash to see who will get a win and who will stay winless in the season. So I'm hoping I picked Pittsburgh tonight. I think they're going to win. Regardless of what happens out there, I don't know. It's probably going to be an ugly game by two teams, both playing ugly, but hopefully we can get kind of a competitive ugly game out of it. I hope Pittsburgh wins. I'd like to see Josh Rosen out there for Miami, but I don't think any of that is actually going to happen. That is the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed it. Tomorrow we'll have the F1 reaction from the Mexican Grand Prix. We'll recap week one of the NBA. Terry will be here to give us his Monday Night Football reaction. We'll also talk about World Series Game 6. Enjoy Monday Night Football tonight. We'll talk tomorrow. Peace.